Welcome to the Sermon Podcast of Redemption Church. The following sermon is by Forrest Kemmer.
Today's scripture reading comes from 2 Kings 8, 7 through 15. Elisha went to Damascus, and Ben-Hadad, king of Aram, was ill. When the king was told, "The man of God has come all the way up here," he said to Hazael, "Take a gift with you and go to meet the man of God. Consult the Lord through him. Ask him, 'Will I recover from this illness?'" Hazael went to meet Elisha, taking with him as a gift 40 camel loads of the finest wares of Damascus. He went in and stood before him and said, "Your son, Ben-Hadad, king of Aram, has sent me to ask, 'Will I recover from this illness?'" Elisha answered, "Go and say to him, 'You will certainly recover. Nevertheless, the Lord has revealed to me that he will in fact die.'" He stared at him with a fixed gaze until Hazael was embarrassed. Then the man of God began to weep. "Why is my Lord weeping?" asked Hazael. "Because I know the harm you will do to the Israelites," he answered. "You will set fire to their fortified places, kill their young men with the sword, dash their little children to the ground, and rip open their pregnant women." Hazael said, "How could your servant, a mere dog, accomplish such a feat? The Lord has shown me that you will become the king of Aram," answered Elisha. When Hazael left Elisha and returned to his master, when Ben-Hadad asked, "What did Elisha say to you?" Hazael replied, "He told me that you would certainly recover." But the next day he took a thick cloth, soaked it in water, and spread it over the king's face so that he died. Then Hazael succeeded him as king. I probably shouldn't have to tell you that this is a rough text and is generally not the fodder of your ordinary Sunday school lessons or, your television specials or anything else that you might be used to when it comes to looking at the Bible. But it's in the Bible, and it does have something to say to us. The name of the sermon, "Even God Watches in Horror." You know, I have a grandfather who was a preacher, and my dad was a minister, and I know the sermon I'm supposed to give you, but I'm actually not going to give it to you. I'm not going to give you the supposed to sermon. I'm going to give you a harder sermon today. With that comes a trigger warning. This is a rough subject. Giving trigger warnings for the Bible might sound a little silly, might sound a little funny, but it pushes us outside of our cultural boundaries a little bit. It pushes us outside of what we might be comfortable with. And that's what this text is going to do today. So the first thing I want to talk about is when 2 Kings was written. And the reason that matters is because we need to understand the audience that was originally reading this text. We really, really need to understand them. It was Israel, Judah, in exile, in Babylon. It was during the captivity. They saw evil things happening constantly around them. This was not a prophetic narrative story as if you were going to read it and say, "Oh, wow, that's going to happen? Well, geez, we better clean up our act, or we better move some stuff around, or man, we better send another army." This already happened. People watched their families die. Mothers ate their children. Like, it happened. Like, the horror happened. And this is a telling from behind that. Does that make sense? So, what I want to impress on you is that the text was not written to you, my nice big group of white Americans. Double checking. Yeah, good. It was not written to you, but this is a great Bible school lesson that I got from my past. It was written for you. It was written for your benefit. It was written for the benefit of those who came after. but it wasn't written to you. And so there's a little bit of cultural work that we have to like do to ourselves to be able to like leave the United States alone, leave our patriotism alone, leave our families alone. We got to kind of step out. And I have a cool way to do that. We are going to play a game. And that game is called All at Once.
Name that film.
Hey, wow, that worked really, really well. Wow, I'm just really impressed. Okay, first film we're going to take a look at. See, I got to keep it light and cheery as it's going like really dark and evil. The first film. Let's see if you can name that film.
Terminator 2.
Judgment Day.
And Gary steals it on the technical. What happens immediately after this scene, this frame, what happens in Terminator 2 Judgment Day?
Nuclear bomb goes off.
The nuclear bomb goes off. And the swing sets catch on fire. And you see her skeleton like holding against the like the it's a great like just filmography, it's great. It's a great moment where she's like holding on to the thing and it's just like, ah. Now, I was born in 1986, okay? And in the 1990s, you know, like, the Cold War was like, you know, it was a thing. It was a thing there. It wasn't like, probably the same as if I had grown up like, or been born in like, you know, 1970-something. It was a little different for me. But I still felt it. It was this latent fear that maybe, just maybe, there might be nuclear war. It might happen. It could happen. And there's that little bit of taste of just, oh my gosh, what if everything came apart? So I had a little taste of that. And if you grew up around the time I did, you might remember that. All right, next film. This is standard church fodder now. What is it? The Matrix. That's right. This is the scene where Morpheus says, we don't know who started the war, but we know that we were the ones that scorched the sky. In The Matrix, in case you haven't seen it, you've had your chance to see it. I'm going to spoil it now, so that's too bad. In The Matrix, the story goes that mankind has created a machine that they got in a war with, similar to Terminator, and that humanity ended up destroying the planet, essentially. Basically destroying the planet. And a lot of people died. And the whole story of The Matrix takes place in like this post-apocalyptic kind of world. There's a lot more to it than that. But this is another film that has entered our common vernacular. We know this story. We know this trope. All right, next one. All right, this one's a little harder.
Dr. Strangelove, or How I Learned to Stop Worrying and Love the Bomb.
With the technical over here, Scotty with the technical. Now, Dr. Strangelove is a great, great movie. Stanley Kubrick, directed by Stanley Kubrick. It's hilarious. It's a funny movie about the end of the world. It's a funny movie about everybody dying except for the extraordinarily rich and powerful. It's hilarious. Never has death been such an interesting and funny topic. But even when you watch it, you feel a little uneasy. There's a little uneasiness as the tension builds, and what's really great about it is it keeps the humor while the tension is building at the same time. It's great. Next one. We're going to get a little more serious here. This is an extremely difficult movie to watch. It is called Grave of the Fireflies, and it is about the aftermath of World War II in Japan. And I won't spoil it for you, but it's not a happy ending, but it's a real ending. These stories have started to enter our vernacular. If you get a chance, you should watch it. Go ahead to the next one.
Hotel Rwanda.
What is the subject of Hotel Rwanda? It's genocide. It's the Rwanda genocide. This is within our lifetime. You know, like, my grandfather, World War II, you know, we went kind of from, like, some fantasy stuff. We're getting more real. This is now within our lifetime, in color. Like, when you guys were born, other people were born, and then they were massacred and killed by the hundreds of thousands. villains. Next one. Y'all know this one, of course. This one's the capstone of our story with genocide. Because in a lot of ways, Americans are heroes in that story, right? Like, you have that great scene in Band of Brothers where they walk in and they start freeing the guys, you know? And the skinny dude in the pajamas comes up and hugs the guy, you know? And it's a great scene. It's great when you get to feel like the hero. But there aren't always heroes in these stories. And I think Schindler's List does a great job in that even the heroes end up walking away in the end with a sense of, I could have done more. You remember that scene, right? So what's really important here, thank you for playing, by the way, y'all did great. Great job identifying the movies. What's important to remember is that we're thinking about things that already happened. So think about the Holocaust. Think about lots and lots of people dying. And it's hard because, you know, you probably haven't seen that first person. Some of you might have. I know we have some world travelers here. Some of you might have, but not all of you. And we want to be able to approach this with a sense of there's something in here for us to learn from someone else's hurt, from someone else's pain, from someone else's loss. The text itself has a lot of like really neat little tricks and gimmicks in it and things like that. But what I want you to see is that part where Elisha cries. He weeps for something he knows will happen, but to the audience that's listening, he's crying for something that did happen. Now a prophet in Israel is a mouthpiece of God. It's not Elisha crying in that moment. It's God crying. You might not see it right away, but that's what it would say to the heart of the person that's living in diaspora. I should give you happy stories. I should tell you how this makes things okay. And I really would like to give you some good news here. But I actually have bad news first. We have heard these stories over and over and over again. We, humanity, we, people, have heard these stories over and over again. And yet we continue to make the same mistakes that lead us to war. We continue to make the same mistakes that lead us to diaspora. We continue to show selfishness. We continue to do these things. And you know, you look at Hazael and I can feel for him. I can be like, my father's dying. The king is dying. I need to set up my regime. I need to set up my country. I need to set up my thing. I need to build this thing. I need to make it greater. That was everything in the ancient world, was make it greater, make it better, make it better. I can see how all of a sudden, him saying, oh, okay, I guess we got to go to this prophet. I guess we got to dump loads of riches and try and get my dad healed. Like, I guess I can see that. But I put all this work in. And the result is that he still takes the kingdom. And that's the price of success for him. He's killing his father. And the story of the young men killed and all of the other evil things we feel are evil. That story is a succession story. It's a story of empire. It's a story of rising. It's a story of power, seizing. Those that know me are probably sick of my business on power, but that's what it is. And it's legitimate from an ancient Assyrian perspective, where your key god, Marduk, kills the elder gods. Killing, it's killing and killing and killing. And there's no higher or lower killing. Some of the greatest stories are about patricide, that's killing the father. That's succession. That's beautiful. That's triumph. That's marching through the streets. Glorious. As Americans, we don't necessarily feel that way, but we can feel the pain of loss for the other side. We can take a moment and consider it. And we can take careful stock, too, of what we have done or our world has done. And we say never again after every massacre, after every genocide, but it continues. I'm not saying it's your fault. I'm not saying it's redemption's fault. I'm not saying it's anybody in the room's fault. But at some point, the culpability is not just with individual people. It's much wider. It's much greater. And it would be a tremendous mistake to say, God willed it then. It's okay that all these people died then. It's like not okay now. It would be a mistake to think that way, because this was not written to people that hadn't experienced it yet. This is a consolation text that God weeps, and that God is horrified by this. God is horrified by this. God is horrified by it. If there was ever part of you that thought that there was a justification for mass murder, for biological warfare, yes, atomic weapons, maybe there's a political thing you could argue, but when you look at victims, you better be horrified, because God's horrified. Be horrified. But here's the good news. And it's not much. It's tiny. God is watching. And he sees. And he mourns. He's in the midst of that. It's a little comfort, and I don't want you to inflate it in your mind or in your heart. Don't sit there and say, oh, it's okay, you know, God's there with me, it's okay. Take little comfort. But take comfort, but take little comfort. And recognize the horror that's behind it. Recognize it for a moment that God sits in the midst of that horror. And, of course, like, the greatest picture of this is the cross. And it can sound cliche to, like, drag the cross in at this point, but, like, take a little comfort in the fact that as these horrors unfold and as you let yourself be impacted by them in your world, that God sits in the midst of them from the cross and says, yes, I was there. And yes, I am there.
To find out more about Redemption Church, visit redemptionbristol.org.